Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to our podcast series, Hidden Growth Champions. In this particular episode, we are focusing on the telecommunications and ICT sectors, something you've seen we've given quite a bit of attention to over the last couple of months. And I'm thrilled to have in our studio Jackie Teo. She's dialing in all the way from Hong Kong. So it's late afternoon on her side, morning on ours. Jackie, welcome to our podcast. You've had an illustrious career in the telecommunications sector, and more specifically in areas like digitization, innovation, and then so much we talk about. But perhaps for our audience, just to give us a bit of an introduction onto yourself.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, as we say these days. And thank you so much for having me on this podcast and being able to, you know, share some of my experiences and learnings in the telco industry along the way. So I've been in the telco industry, for about 25 years now, I think, or just slightly more. And it's one of those wonderful industries that have given me so much. Right from the start, when we went from fixed line to mobile, from 2G now to 5G. And it's one of those industries that continuously keeps transforming. And I've been very lucky, I think, all these years to have always found something interesting to do, whether it be from transformational work to technology, emerging technology, to where we are now, which is really looking at how telcos now reinvent themselves to move into a whole new set of new, I'm going to say, terms that are not necessarily associated with telco, but have a lot of implication to us and the customers we serve. So, you know, long history in telcos, and really working globally with a lot of different players, and have had the privilege to see a lot of telcos grow up and change along the way.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, Jackie, when I think about telcos, particularly in emerging markets, they've brought right at the outset such promise to these markets. In the early stories of connecting people for the first time, of people being able to learn, educate themselves, trade, find critical information, was such a promise in the early days. The telco industry was really a pioneer in many of the services that we now almost take for granted, that we see as normal, that that instant access that we have to information that we need. So when we talk about the transformation of telcos now, give us a sense of what are the kinds of shifts that are driving the industry to reinvent itself once again, to provide the kind of transformative value to customers in the current context?
Well, I think one of the things that's happening to all of us at the moment, other than all in the middle of a pandemic, is that what the last 2 years has brought on us is an acceleration of this, I'm going to say, engagement with connectivity or communication via connectivity rather than in person. And I want to say we're all working from home or online, but that's not exactly true. I think it's more that the bulk of communication has actually shifted to be in a connected world. And a lot of our transactions are moving towards a virtualized space more than anything. And what we have gotten there, I think we would have gotten there at some point in time. But I think what's happened in the last 2 years is that this has completely accelerated. So you look at things where the world is going, time on our hands to think about these things. But you look at things that's really accelerated the use of satellites as a triangulation for connectivity, for example, giving rise to things like space tourism, the emerging technology around robotics, for example, the integration of robotics, not only into our physical world, but into our virtual worlds as well. Mm. The disintegration of central authorities. I think about what 10 years ago, even three or four years ago, Bitcoin was something speculative that everybody did, right? It was only for crazy people that had more money than sense. You look at where self-driving cars and clean tech is going and energy storage is going, and it's all coming much quicker to all of us. And I think what this is saying to telcos is that they really need to find, as it is with every change that we've had in telco industry, right? You've really had to find what's the best role you can play in the new economies that are growing. And it's not a matter, do I play in it? It's a question for most telcos as to what is the best role. And it comes with, you know, what's your organization about? Where's your culture? Where's your strategy? Do you want to be in or not? A lot of telcos have pivoted to some of these spots, and then a couple of them have gone the other way. And I think about the new telco structures. It's quite interesting that you mentioned emerging markets. As you're aware, in Asia, a lot of our markets, it's not one big continent, if you like. It's like the Middle East or Europe, you know, it's multiple geographies, and within that geographies, multiple distinct demographics. So if I think about what's been happening in some of these emerging economies, you look at some of the countries here, they've jumped from 3G straight to 5G. They're bypassing 4G. A lot of these countries, you look at Myanmar, you look at Vietnam, they're going just straight to 5G. They're not even stopping to build, you know, what they consider the legacy end of the industrialized world is trying to figure out how to get out from 4G and deal with the cost structures that come with that many generations of mobile networks. So you look at it and you think about, you know, where are the telcos now? And the strategy would vary depending on what, you know, where your organization's going. You look at the monopoly incumbents, you've got now pure play ISPs. These are getting, I'm going to say, a lot of competition from cable companies. Right. They're reinventing themselves as broadband providers, providing multiple offerings. You've now got the carve out of things like telcos. So before you had mobile operators, you have MVNOs. Now you have just telcos, right? That they're providing top of tower assets, which are so necessary for things like 5G mesh, talking 6G, I think, at the moment. And then you think about things like infrastructure players. So now you've got carve outs for infrastructure code. And it's really quite interesting. It's almost like telcos decided they were going to be all things to all businesses. And then now those big telcos are saying, well, to actually get the best value out of each of the assets that we have and each of the services that we have in these new economies, we're going to carve it all out. So then InfraCos say, right, now we have network and fiber-only companies. You have the rise of things like altnets. DCs, data centers, are one of the biggest carve-out in the telco industry at the moment. They're not even part of InfraCo. They're just like pure DC businesses. And that's given rise to things like multi-party investments, you know, where they partner with things like energy parties, local governments, real estate companies, and things like that. And they're expanding into markets that really do not have nationwide fiber access. So I like what you've said about in the early days when a lot of us started in the telco industry, we really had this service purpose in mind that communication or connectivity was a basic foundation to enabling communities to access things like information, you know, the distribution of information, education, and all this sort of thing, right? That built the foundations of a lot of, I'm going to say, communities and economies. And I remember in the early days when some of the emerging countries, you know, we were in places like Bangladesh, India, Cambodia before started to industrialize itself. And that was exactly what we did. And back then, we partnered with the local energy suppliers. You know, you put towers and fiber up to some remote villages in some places. And then they said, great, you know, we've got like 1,000. In those days, they were 2.5G phones, but you didn't have batteries or backup energy. So you actually had to go talk to the energy players and say, you know, could you actually bring it to them? Because otherwise they wouldn't be able to recharge their phones. And there was no point in them having computers in those days. The ideas of desktop, really, you know, laptops was still luxury. And so those sorts of ecosystems or those sorts of marketplaces really have, I would say, taken a life of their own in these past few years. That's what I'm seeing definitely in the telco industry.
Now, Jack, let's go a little bit into carve-out phenomena, because it is a fascinating. Mm-hmm. And when I see carve-outs, and we've seen this not just in telcos, we've seen it in financial services. We're now starting to see that even in energy and in so many different industries. I always ask myself, what is truly driving this? Why would a carve-out be a better, more efficient solution or a more customer-focused solution than an integrated offering? And in telcos, we've seen quite a bit of it. You've spoken about the infrastructure carve-out, for example. Speak to us a little bit about what, in your view, is driving at least the attempts to carve out, to create more niched, more kind of specific types of telcos versus the attempts by some to integrate more, to create a more focused, more customer-focused, I should say, organization with a broad set of capabilities, because we've seen both. So maybe talk to us a little bit about some of those carve-out attempts or some of these carve-out approaches. It is fascinating.
It is fascinating, isn't it? And I agree with you. I think if we look at the telecommunications industry at large, the two models you spoke about actually still exist. They do exist, and I think they will exist. So the idea of a telecommunications organization that has multiple broad-based service offerings versus a very specific carved-out organization that focuses on a specific set of offerings. And I really think those two models will continue to exist in the market. And you'll probably see the telco industry sort of thread some gray lines as they go in and out of those models, right? As they're trying to find that balance in the markets that they are. And sometimes it may work for some markets where these telcos are, and sometimes it may not work for other markets where they are. So I think you'll see telcos sort of go in between and out, and they have a multi-pronged strategy rather than do one or the other, right? Especially when they're straddling several different market segments, right? And so why do I think these things have happened? I think if you look at two maybe macro factors that's happening in the market, the first one is actually really a changing financial landscape. And this was probably brought on, I would say, slightly more than 2 years ago. Things like interest rates have been at historic lows for a long, long time. I don't think we've ever seen a period post-depression, that is, where interest rates have been at such a sustained low for such a long time. So when you look at that and you look at the telcos trying to generate shareholder values, a lot of these infrastructures being owned by private equity or infrastructure funds at the moment, there's a huge demand for assets to actually create better returns. So the idea of actually pulling out assets that sometimes are not necessarily complementary makes more sense to, I'm going to say, releasing some of that shareholder value. And I don't mean it in a very mercenary sense. I don't think telcos are mercenary about it. I think if you look at the fundamentals of what drives these financials is whether or not the telco can operate each of these, I'm going to say, areas in a much more efficient way than if it was all sitting in one telco. I think one of the best arguments that I can think for carve out is this, right? If, you know, working in a telco for a long time, you've always had engineering departments, but I've never yet seen an engineering department where a voice engineer was the same as an IP engineer, was the same as a mobile network engineer, was the same as, say, an outside plant engineer. They're actually all quite different skill sets. So it's a little bit of a pretense if we try to say, oh, look, you know, if we put everything into one engineering department, we get economies of scale. And I think a lot of network engineers out there would say, well, never worked that way. So it didn't make sense to continue to put all these things together. However, if you carved it out and said, you know, I'm going now to be a fiber network provider, and I'm not only going to take the fiber I have, but I'm going to buy up, acquire, consolidate, whatever you want to say, a whole bunch of fiber, and actually take all those engineers and apply them to, it's not 100,000 kilometers of cable, I've not got 1 million kilometers of cable, you've got a better chance at those economies of scale. I think telcos have really thought long and hard about, you know, whether or not they want to do that. I still say that is a macro factor, and that's the first one. That's the financial one. The second one is that with a lot of pressure, especially in the last 2 years, I'm going to say of more distributed connections. And it's not just driven by people working from home. It's also driven by the need for content, the gentrification of areas outside a metro city, the growth of rural regions in a lot of countries, the desire for people, or the desire for governments actually to build corridors, right? So many governments and countries now building tech hub corridors, for example, manufacturing yes. corridors, energy corridors. So that distribution for connectivity and the need for a multi-access edge, I think is really driving a lot of countries and governments and regulators to say, how do we really, in a fundamental way, get infrastructure out, be it mobile site, base stations, fiber, just fiber and nodes to cover physical distance. And governments are not only pressuring, but they're also restructuring how they look at CapEx funding to expand such connectivity. I mean, you look at what the US has done with their CapEx spending for broadband. They've now said, got the FCCC, it's not going to do it. We're going to like distribute it back to all the telcos, or shouldn't say redistribute it, but it's more a decentralized way of distributing the funding for that sort of CapEx spend. And it's also the third thing I think is also, you see there's a liberation of regulatory stance in a lot of ways in what's happening. So if you look at a lot of the 5G testing, this is very pre-COVID. I think a lot of the regulators would have gone down this way at some point in time. If you look at how they've allocated spectrum, sure, they've allocated the bulk of it again to telcos, but right now there is allocation of spectrum directly to enterprise and it's growing. So if you look at the amount of private networks, especially around 5G networks, allocated directly to enterprise, directly to municipalities, as a lot of them grow smart city type initiatives, that's really changed the way telcos have had to change about structure. So why would you not create something like a telco or a specific mobile only organization that knows, has the expertise, has deep expertise, has the ability to attract talent and skill that just worked in that area? So what's driving this, I'm going to say this thinking around carve-out, whether or not incumbents can achieve, I shouldn't say incumbents, whether or not telcos can achieve it or desire to achieve it, I think really comes down to their strategy and where they see their return on their roadmaps. Yeah.
You've mentioned a really important word in this context, which is around ecosystems. When other players have access to spectrum, physical assets, cheap finance, et cetera, one could get, certainly if I reflect from our work in other industries, one could get very interesting tie-ups. And one of the kind of key principles of ecosystems that we find time and time again, the strategy for the overall ecosystem, the value that could be unlocked for the ecosystem as a result, often is multiples of one organization can do in its own specific strategy. It may have a strategy how to operate well, or even how to orchestrate an ecosystem to work, getting publics and private sector together, et cetera, but very often the value at stake becomes much bigger, and the societal impact gets bigger as well. When we start to look at it, not just in terms of financial returns, but the societal, the broader impact. So when we think about it in that context, you know, what are some of the, I'll call them the ecosystem moves, or some of the more innovative thinking that you've seen that comes through that telcos are starting to get involved in? And because those tie-ups seem very interesting. They seem as if they're done well, they could unlock a lot of value well beyond just what the telco could achieve on their own. Are there any examples that come to mind, or any particular approaches that you've seen that are worth mentioning?
Yeah, look, I think that's a really interesting space for telcos at the moment. And the idea of ecosystems and marketplaces have actually existed in telcos for quite a long time. If you look at how telcos with wholesale, what's different now is that with the onslaught of things like microservices, APIs, SDN, those sorts of, I'm going to call them mature technologies, we've had the luxury of actually opening our ecosystems and marketplaces to a lot more than bilaterals and other telcos. So if I look at, well, I mentioned before that one of the most interesting things, especially when you talk about emerging models, open access, what else, infracos, you know, tel companies and things like that, but they're partnering with any energy partners, local governments, etc. Right, I mentioned that before, but also I think if you look at specifically, if just broadly around the world, right, if I look at specifically what's happening in, for example, blockchain, right, the use of blockchain and how telcos desire to use blockchain, I think a lot of them thinking from the fact that, oh, well, let's find a use case for blockchain. But I think what's really been really interesting is that where you look at blockchain for things like settlement, roaming, payments, identity management and authentication, I think if you look beyond just what the telco ecosystem, and this is happening in all parts of the world, better not mention too many telcos here. Let's just mention the countries, right? If you look at what's happening in France, even in Hong Kong, anywhere where a country, in the UK even, right, anywhere where a country has things like open APIs, open banking APIs, anywhere where a country is moving towards digital currency with their regulation. And there are quite a lot of countries. I think of UK, France, as I mentioned, Korea, Japan. India's not quite there yet with the telcos. Hong Kong, definitely. Singapore, right? Those sorts of countries. If we just look at things like identity management and authentication, if you were a fixed line provider or mobile provider, you would have more access to a person's identity than most banks, than most financial institutes. And you not only have that, you probably have insight into their location and other things like that. Now, data privacy rules applying, et cetera. One of the best things I've seen in industry is really creating that know your customer, the KYC frameworks, where banks and telcos and energy companies come together and triangulate data points that validate identity of their customers. So then just talking a lot more about things like easier ways to provide credit, for example. And these are credit scores that can be shared or can be triangulated, can be recalculated depending on what a telco needs versus an energy company needs versus a bank needs. Understanding if a product that a bank wants to sell is suitable based on something the person has done in energy versus the use of their telco. And you see a lot of these models coming up. I see it especially with KYC, which is identity management and authentication. I've seen definitely in Hong Kong where we use for a customer that is trying to access an open banking wallet, for example. And I think those sorts of ecosystems where you're partnering a lot more will exist. And that's one type of ecosystem. I think the other type of ecosystem that I see that is probably more direct in terms of where telcos are going is in this whole growth in smart cities. So the bringing together of things such as IoT, smart city blueprints, and NFTs. So if you look at places in Europe, and certainly I look at, I'm going to say Poland, because there's actually specific examples in Poland. There's specific examples in Germany and UK. And here's what they do, right? So the mobile company treats their SIM cards, they turn mobile phones into a key that enables the user to actually access smart city applications. And each of these things are then, how should I say, authenticated, if you like, or validated by an NFT platform provider, right? There's no money exchange. We're just talking about digitized tokens that enable them to do things like transport sharing systems, electric meter readings. They can do things like unlock doors for emergency services and things like that. So there's a lot of trialing of this in cities like turn on car engines. Hotels at one stage moved to the point where they would send you a PIN so that you go straight to the room, you wouldn't have to check in and you do all that. But now it's more than just a PIN. You actually create that transaction on NFT platform, either supported by the telco or not supported by telco, but it definitely has to have the telco element. It's connected to your SIM card and phone. And that's what you would actually use to say that I'm actually supposed to be at that hotel at that time, etc. People are selling concert tickets that way now, so you don't have scalping and don't have fake tickets out there. And this is not just physical stuff. This is like to virtual conferences, to virtual concerts. It's just anything that's moved into the virtual world. And I find it really quite fascinating. And I think telcos really have a big space and a big role to play in all these new economies, really.
Now, Jackie, that kind of brings me to an area that we're very passionate about, which is about leadership. And when I think about the roles of the role of telcos in opening up new markets, bringing new technology solutions, and even pulling some of these players that you spoke about into these trials, into these attempts to provide services in a more efficient manner. And you get some wonderful examples of these. One is to think about the role of the leader, right? One is to think about, you know, as these organizations not just transform externally into these new opportunity spaces, they also transform internally. They transform the way they think. They transform the way that they make decisions, that they empower others to innovate in the organization. Perhaps give us a sense of from you've worked with a number of telco organizations, the leadership journey. How does it start? What are some of the early signs that you can see that an organization, telco organization in particular, more future fit, more ready to take on these new opportunities, and the role of a leader in instigating and in catalyzing this kind of a change?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I'm going to say, and I'm really passionate. I love that question because I'm so passionate about this part. it's the core of transformation and transformative change in any company, let alone a telco, right? How do you tell? The first two things I look at is how your budgets are being allocated. And this is going to sound really funny because it's got nothing to do with tech. It's got really nothing to do with the fundamentals of the telco, right? But the first one is how are budgets being actually allocated for the company to hit the brave new world? The second one is how are resources being recruited? And I can tell you, if you do not see leadership in those, you have got a big challenge ahead in your transformation and journey. And so what does leadership look like in those two areas? To me, and this is not just the job of the finance department or job of the HR department. This is leadership in the organization that truly says we are going to shift left right now. This whole organization is going to move that way. So it's leadership at all fronts, and it's not the sole job of any specific department in any workplace. So the first thing I look at in a telco is these two areas specifically, you know, the terminology. So are we still doing, you know, how are we still doing our business cases, for example? How are we leading think around what is worth investing in? How are we being curious as to the unknowns, right? So we don't know what we don't know. Do we follow everybody? Do we peg the same ROI to everything? Should some things actually return, I don't know, 2x% versus the same old IRR that we constantly look at? And, you know, I look at some telcos and they go, oh no, we always ask for 15%. And so every project has to have 15%, where everybody's scrambling for this new technology or there's access needs to be had, right? These things should maybe return 2x, 3x, 4x, right? And why aren't we asking for it? And why aren't we driving it? And why aren't we being curious as to what can be done with it? So it's really around taking the leadership around those conversations in the organization and leading it that way. The second one is around, I'm going to say, in the acquisition and retention of talent. And when I say that, I look at what is happening with the new economies, where we're progressing it to the metaverse, for example, you know, and I look at, do we necessarily need new organization structures? I'm not sure, you know, it's that courage to question whether the current org structures actually are effective. And but nobody wants to touch that. It's one of those really crazy subjects that nobody considers, but it's the fundamentals of transformational change. So do we need a new org structure? Do we even conceptualize how things like VR, AR, XR, MR, whatever, robots are actually an integral part of the resource pool and not just technology that we use with the resource pool, right? So what is our resource pool? What is the organization structure that now inherently includes not just a human factor and resources, it includes everything else that actually, how should I say, can produce an outcome. And, you know, when you see organizations that maybe they're not really at that end of conversation, but where you see organizations that have the courage, the openness, the safety, the transparency to encourage those sorts of conversations, I would say you've got a bit of leadership there. And then you have that next conversation, which goes, so do all our roles make sense? And what leadership looks like for me is you're not only questioning how your role fits into this new universe, but also you're encouraging and challenging the people around you to say, you know, at the forefront, you know, you're pushing yourself to the forefront and go, do we actually need new roles? Does the way we exist right now actually make sense for us to take this telco into the next 3 years, 5 years, 6 years? I can tell you, anybody who's had to recruit millennials will know exactly what this means. They're not really, a lot of them, they're not really into roles. They're not really into job descriptions. I can tell you, the last four roles I've had, I didn't have a job description. I was told approximately what the organization was trying to get at. And they said, well, you know, we didn't really know how to write the job description. And I always laugh and I said, I'm not sure there's an exact job description these days that could cover what you'd like someone to be or do while they're collaborating with you in a workspace. And I think getting there in terms of then having some leadership of where the telco is going in this brave new world. I also think, like, when I look at leadership in the telco industry, I think where I can see telcos making a big sense is the ones that have the good conversations around as I said before, do we carve out or do we not carve out? Do we go down this road that everybody's going down? Do we do NFTs for the sake of doing NFTs? And they're really challenging themselves and their purpose and their service to community and all those things that represent their values and represent the values of the people in the organization and actually being quite true to them. And I would say that's what leadership looks like for me in the telco.
I really love the way you framed it as questions, because in many of the organizations that we've seen and worked with in telco industry, it's by posing the question rather than saying we've never done this or we shouldn't or it's the 15% hurdle rate, that opening of questions can lead you to many new places, whether you're questioning your organizational structure or your roles, whether you're open to millennials and new talent coming in. So I really love that the way you phrase it and the kind of questions that you're posing. Jackie, maybe just a last question from my side. You did mention millennials, so it kind of leads me to my last question, which is really around in knowing that you are very involved, beyond your role in telcos, in promoting new technology, in helping startups, in mentoring young leaders who are trying to change and disrupt industries. You're a judge on startup competitions and in many other ways. I know there's one coming up quite soon, in fact, in Hong Kong. I just wanted to get a sense from you when you speak to young audiences, when you speak to those who are just kind of starting their professional life and perhaps not thinking about transforming, within a large corporate, but rather looking either at more flexible roles or perhaps striking out on their own. What kind of advice would you give them as they embark on this exciting journey?
It's one of my passions, which is really looking at the youth, and not just youth in telco or technology, as you said, but it's really, I look at them and say, you're the next generation of our leaders. You are our hope of where this world is going to be and whether it's going to be a good world, right? And I always say to them three things, right? First one is that I was very lucky in my journey to have mentors, to have people that helped me and people that encouraged me to ask for help, to realize that I couldn't do things on my own, right? And I think a lot of times, our education systems or the systems that the young generation goes through teaches them, in a sense, to be quite independent. They're independent thinkers. They do work in groups, but they're still quite independent. They pass exams on their own at the end of the day, right? And it's quite ingrained in them. And even for myself, I was very lucky at the start of my career to have mentors and coaches and people around me say, advice is free, feedback is free, be open to it, realize you can't do things by yourself, and always seek, always be curious and seek that learning from others, right? And I think that's one of the first thing that I would say to them, just no man is an island alone. Surround yourself by people that will, give you that honest truth, that will encourage you to be curious, encourage your learning agility, and always push you to be that best version of yourself. The second thing you then do is don't forget that happened to you, and please give back to someone else whenever that opportunity takes you. Because just as they are going to find that challenge along the way, learn who they are, learn how to be, learn what a good version of themselves looks like, right? When you're competing against yourself, I think 99% of the time. So trying to figure out what a good version of yourself looks like never is easy. So anything you can give back to that next person, do so. Because you are going to be one of the biggest influencers of their life. They're going to remember you. They're going to be talking to other people about you. And that's the greatest service you can give to someone, right? Which is really helping along someone and making them as successful as they could be. So never forget to give back, right? It's the second one. The third one I say is, it's going to sound simple, but it's about challenging yourself and always challenge yourself. But I say it in this context, which is, I think today we get a lot of instant gratification and we want things really quickly and we have no patience if change takes a long time and we want answers. If you send out an email, you want an answer, if you send out a text message, oh, the person read it and they need to answer me now, that sort of thing. And I say, one of the best things that a person can do to remember two values and then challenge yourself with this constantly, right? And to me, the two values in life is kindness and service. And it's about you're constantly challenging yourself and about being kind to the people around you. With kindness comes grace, with kindness comes respect, with kindness comes collaboration. And it just fuels that many values and principles that would drive you as a person. And you would understand your own values and principles and what you would be willing to say yes to and what you would have to say no to and what you would tell people with all that kindness in your heart. You know, I can't possibly agree with you that this is the right thing to do, and give them the best advice from the bottom of your heart, right? It doesn't matter what the issue is, whether it's a business issue, a tech issue, whatever it is. And you'll find that propels you and creates a foundation of your values and principles. And that's one thing I live by. And the second one really is having that purpose of service, right? Which is, you can be in things to fuel your own, I'm going to say your own ego, right? And maybe that's what that instant gratification gives you in this day and age, right? It's like, oh, you know, I've got something, you know, put things in the depth of service, be it service to community, service to a customer, service to your colleagues. You know, it's that sense of purpose and that sense of creating community rather than that instant gratification for self, right? And that would be the third thing I say, which is the more you can actually think about the world in that way, or think about a problem or solution or project or whatever it is you're getting faced with day to day, the more you actually understand where you can challenge yourself. And a lot of people come and ask me, you know, Jackie, how do you see the big picture? How do you know, you know, what's it? And I say it's because of this concept of service. I'm not just looking out where digital is going or where tech is going or, you know, where my department is going. I'm concerned about, are my salespeople going to get fed at the end of the month? Are they going to make their revenues? Do I understand that they're really not really on with this change, digging further into it? And you're thinking about, how can I actually add value and be of service to all these players and how they come together? And I think those are the two things, just kindness and this concept of service that I would encourage the next generation of leaders to really have.
It's fantastic. Jackie, it was such a wonderful conversation. I know we could spend another hour unpacking some of the things we've spoken about, but really thank you for making the time, and I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Thank you. It was wonderful and I really enjoyed it. And I hope your audience really can take away a thing or two out of this.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.